Hello, and welcome to this podcast from Consider This. Please let me know what you think and tell others about us on social media. This podcast was originally broadcast live on Northumberland 89.7 FM. You can hear this show live every Friday at noon. Thank you for downloading this program, and I hope you enjoy it. Hello, I'm Robert Washburn, and welcome to Consider This Northumberland, a current affairs program dedicated to the issues facing our community. We talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life in Northumberland County. So I'm asking you, the listener, to take some time out of your busy day to consider this. The demand for rental housing in Northumberland is obvious, as the vacancy rate sits at barely 1%. So when a proposal to build four three-story buildings in Colborne goes before the Social Services Committee next week, it may be good news. A proposal to build 60 affordable apartments at 123 King Street East will be brought before politicians for consideration. This is in addition to the 39 units already existing on the site, and market value units. More importantly, it will have units suitable for families as well as single persons. On today's show, two officials from Northumberland County will provide a preview of the proposal and explain how it fits into the overall housing strategy for the community. It is my pleasure to have on the show, back once again, Rebecca Carman, Associate Director of Housing and Homeless for Northumberland County, and Neil Ellis, Housing Services Manager for the Northumberland County. Welcome both to Consider This Northumberland.
Thanks for having us, Rob.
I understand you're taking a major proposal to the Social Services Committee on July 31st. It involves the construction of four three-story buildings at 123 King Street East in Colborne. This will create a total of 60 affordable apartments. This is in addition to 39 units that are currently on site. Rebecca, can you give us a bit of history about this site?
Yeah, so this site, the county in partnership with the NCHC actually purchased this site last March. We closed on it. The existing site is home to 22 bachelor units. And at the time of the acquisition, it was what we believe to be the most affordable rental units in our community across Northumberland that was owned and operated by a private landlord. So for us, it was important that we were able to save these 22 tenancies. So that is what we did on March. We've spent the last year and a bit getting to know the building, getting to know the site, getting to our tenants and supporting our tenants in their housing stabilization, ensuring that they had good services available to them. And part of that work did include bringing on board some consultants to do some kind of desktop feasibility studies to determine the viability for redevelopment, which is something we do for all of our sites across the NCHC and other county-owned property. We're constantly evaluating for viability for housing.
Neil, Northumberland County Housing Corporation, or NCHC as Rebecca just referred to it, is going to be presenting this to the committee. What kind of units will these be?
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Yeah, we're looking forward to going in front of a committee next week and just presenting them with our plan for redevelopment. We haven't broken down the specific amount and numbers of each type of unit, but we'll be looking at a mix up from potentially bachelor all the way up to four-bedroom units so that we're able to serve a variety of residents who are on our wait list within Northumberland County. So we might see bachelors, one-bed, two-bed, three- and four-bedrooms at the new site when we redevelop.
Now, how do you make that determination? I know that you keep a waiting list of people who need sites, but are suitably need units. But how do you determine that mix? Because I know there is a great need, not for just bachelors or one bedrooms, but for families, housing families. Could you just walk us through that process?
Yeah, I mean, there's sort of two things that I think play into that, Rob. One is what is on our wait list in the Colborne area? Who is looking for housing on our centralized wait list in that area? What is their family composition? How many bedrooms would they need? We also want to, when we're looking at redeveloping, we want to be creating balanced communities, right? And mixed neighborhoods. For the health of the area that's going in. So we're also thinking about it from that point of view as well, of having a healthy and balanced community that's going in.
Can you just explain to me what it means, a healthy balance? What are we talking about when we talk about a healthy
Yeah.
balance?
We're looking for a mix of socioeconomic backgrounds within the community, right? So that we're not we're creating neighborhoods where individuals can be living in there. A good healthy mix of family composition, a good mix of backgrounds within the neighborhood, just to have a balance there within that neighborhood, right? And just create community.
Rebecca, you wanted to add something, please.
Yeah, and I think one of the really exciting things about this proposal too is that in the Colborne area, we only currently have bachelor and one bedroom apartments that are owned and operated by the NCHC. But we know that there are, larger households who do need more housing, a larger unit, and need subsidized housing, and who want to live in Colborne or other areas. So it's really exciting that we were also able to introduce these, multi-bedroom units for families and for others to be able to live where, throughout the county, regardless of those family sizes.
Neil, coming back to you, what will happen to the current building on the site?
Our plans for the current building is to eventually demolish it. Our intention is to build in phases. So we would build a complex, a building large enough that those individuals who are currently at 123 King Street would be able to move into a new property, a new location. Then we would demolish, and then we would continue to build a second phase with the rest of the units that would go in there. So we'll be in conversation with those individuals who are living in that building about what our plans are, and engaging them so that they're aware of this process.
Rebecca, what is the cost associated with the project? Do you have any idea yet?
No, Rob, we don't have any idea of the construction cost. I mean, we've got experience in building in other areas throughout Coburg. We are going to council to seek approval for the pre-construction costs. So that would be to get us fully into the ground. So those are things to achieve our vision. We'll need rezoning, we'll need official plan amendments. So getting all of those pieces done, as well as the building design, a contractor on board. But that is what we're going to council for, or committee to recommend to council next week. And it will be, we're asking for an upset limit of $1.5 million for that in order to hire all of those consultants and do that work.
Where's that money coming from?
Sure. So for the pre-construction costs, it's being funded right now through the housing reserves. So we have a housing reserve set up for this type of project. As we get closer to construction ready, we will also seek other funding opportunities. These things include our Canada Mortgage Housing Corporation has a seed program. So we'll be looking at eligibility for some of those pre-construction costs to be offset by external funding sources as we get closer to ready to go.
Neil, are there any environmental concerns with the property as you know it now?
No, we haven't. We did have some studies done, as Rebecca indicated earlier, about the feasibility of doing this work, and none of them raised any environmental concerns in terms of the site location that we're going to redevelop on.
Has there been any neighborhood concerns?
No, we haven't have received any complaints or concerns from neighbors about the property as it exists. And of course, we're just announcing now the work that we are going to be doing. Colborne itself is undergoing a little bit of a transformation. Fidelity Homes is planning on putting in a lot of very large neighborhood in and around our property at 123 King. So that area is going to change over the next handful of years as it stands.
I'm sure there may be people listening who might have concerns or are wondering if there's going to be a public consultation about any aspect of this. Rebecca, how is that part of the process going to work?
The county is committed to engaging and consulting with public, and we will do so throughout this project. I imagine there'll be a web page up very shortly with what information we've got with the development of 123 King. We will engage through the planning process, again, looking for those zoning changes and those types of things that we will ensure that there are those opportunities for the public to comment and provide feedback as we look to further the development moving forward.
Now, as plans like this are being put together, I know internally there's lots of chit chat. Has anyone from the county talked to the municipal council or municipal staff in advance?
We've had informal conversations with Crammy staff. We spoke to them in advance of purchasing the site as well. So we have been in correspondence with them. Our consulting firms that did those feasibility studies would have also had those conversations to assess the feasibility and the capacity to bring these units online. So I would say yes, and we look forward to more detailed and more frequent conversations with Crammy staff as we go through the process.
How about the politicians? Do they have an inkling that this is coming?
I think so. I can't speak to what someone has that inkling of. But it's definitely been one of those sites that they are aware that we've been looking at the potential redevelopment of. They know that we do this for all of our sites. So, I mean, there have been some closed session conversations related to potentially developing the site. And what I will say, Rob, for us in this process, where we are in it, in the very, very early stages of it, our number one focus is ensuring that our existing tenants at 123 King are feeling secure, are feeling safe, and know that they are a priority in this, in the communication strategy, that they're the first to know that this is being proposed and they understand what are that their tenancy will move forward into the new building. They are our number one concern in all of this because they're the ones who are directly impacted by this. And it's one of the reasons why we did the feasibility study the way we did it. So we had all of the information in front of us to know if we could, it was a priority for us to navigate how we could build on this site without impacting or with lowering the impacts for our existing tenants. In the same way we did for Elgin Park when we redeveloped Elgin Park.
Neil, I noticed there is a mix of rent geared to income and market rent housing, and you alluded to this earlier. I'd like to explore it a little bit more. With such a great demand for affordable units, why is there a mix? Why isn't this just all rent geared to income?
Yeah, thanks, Rob. That's a great question. Thanks for asking that. I think it comes down to two aspects. One, right now, as Rebecca alluded, the funding for the pre-construction work all comes out of housing reserve. And so if we continue to build and the units that we build are all RGI units, then we have to look at what the viability of our buildings are and the ability to keep constructing and to keep building. So one of the reasons why we have the mix and the blend is so that we can derive income from those market rent units, right? Which then allows us to grow and expand and develop more affordable housing at a quicker pace. It also goes into that blending of the community, of the mixing of incomes within that community, so that you don't drive past that site and identify it as everyone living there as being a low income. The idea is you should be able to drive past that site and not be able to identify what type of housing it is, other than the fact that it's housing.
I also noted that it mentions seniors and persons with special needs. Why is that? How much of a demand is there for units for these particular groups?
There is certainly a demand for that. Individuals with special needs and accessibility. Also part of our option when funding, when we're looking and working with the Canadian Mortgage Housing Corporation, is that in their funding requirements, they require that 20% of units be accessible. And so when we're looking at our design, we're incorporating that in because they're a major funder for the projects we're working on.
Rebecca, we've spoken many times about the huge demand for affordable rental housing. Vacancy rates are at 1%. Rental rates are higher than neighboring communities. Will this project and the current one at Elgin Street serve as a model for the private sector developers to create apartments? Are you paving the way?
I'd like to think we're paving the way, of course. I think it's a great question because I think one of the things we know about building affordable housing is that a ton of equity and financial support is needed to make the construction happen. There are reasons why market rental units are being built at a price that's not affordable. And so it's really about the model moving forward and how we can make those models work. What the county is looking to do is find ways in which we can partner with the private sector to help offset some of their lower end market costs into navigating that. But we do hope that our Elgin Park development, our Ontario Street development, our 123 King and Colborne development demonstrate the way in which we can increase the diversity of stock in our community. The other thing that I'll say that one of the things that our affordable housing strategy found was, a real lack of diversity in housing options. And that includes purpose-built rental at market levels. And those units have a place. They serve a purpose. They might, if with enough of them, they could equalize some of the market and the rent levels. And so really, we're looking to encourage all sorts of housing. We need, there was a report that was written last year for commissioned by Habitat for Humanity Northumberland, who talked about the diversity of housing that's needed outside of kind of sprawling 1 acre luxury lots. But that we need townhouses, we need semi-detached, we need modest single detached homes, we need rental units, we need all sorts of things in our community to diversify options for people seeking housing in our community.
Well, I know you before when you and I talked, Rebecca, you've mentioned the fact that you talk to developers. I mean, you guys have these communications, and I just wonder, are you standing there saying, "Hey, look, this is what we're doing. We've got this formula. See how it works." And all of a sudden, we have these affordable units, these rent-to-income units. Why can't this just be something that developers come along and go, "Oh, great. See what they do? Let's do what they're doing." Why isn't that happening, or why not?
I think really it's about the financial modeling. So for us, while Neil spoke to getting our operating costs to be viable so that there's not an ongoing impact to the tax levy, we are borrowing for the majority of these builds. So at Elgin Park, the county is borrowing, upwards of 50% of those costs and are paying them back over the term of the mortgage through the rents that are provided. So we're carrying quite a bit of that borrowing cost, and we're able to because we aren't looking for profit. We're not geared to the same type of model that a private sector developer would be. So the level of financial support that would be required for a private developer to be able to build units at this level, a large number of units at this level, is significant. I think that would be one of the big differences. And the other thing is that, for the county, working with nonprofit housing providers and working with the NCHC, we also have a partner who is by design committed to affordability, for time immemorial, right? Like, we will commit to those affordable units so those investments can navigate and stay strong in our communities. The private sector definitely has a role to play. The county is working to partner with more private developers to support the inclusion of affordability in their builds. But I also think that to expect a private developer to build at this level of affordability without massive incentives from upper levels of government, I think is challenging and unfair for them in their models.
Neil, how hard a sales job do you think you have ahead of you as you prepare to go before the committee?
I think that the committee and county council as a whole understand the role that the NCHC plays. Are they committed towards expanding the affordable housing options that exist within the county? And so I think this is an easy sell. I think that this is a project that is a win for the residents at the current building, because we'll be upgrading and providing them with new units down the line that are modern and new. It's a win for the county in terms of bringing on those additional approximately 40 additional affordable units into the market, brings more rental stock into the market. So in my mind, this is an easy sell. This is a win all around. So I'm excited and encouraged, and I hope that when I bring it to the committee, that they hear that enthusiasm and that they equal and match it, if not exceed it.
What questions do you think they'll ask?
I think they'll ask some of the questions that you've asked today, questions about affordability, perhaps some questions on construction methodology. They'll ask questions about impacts to our current tenants, for sure. Those are all questions that I anticipate that they'll ask.
What are the hurdles you need to clear with politicians to be successful in this ask?
I think just demonstrating that we have a clear and viable plan in front of us for the redevelopment path. There will be some amendments we need to make and ask of CRAMI and their council in terms of zoning and amendments to their official plan. We hope that we will have a municipality that wants to be on board and partner with the NCHC in bringing more affordable units into their municipality. And so we hope that they will be excited and be amenable to making those changes. But those are some of the challenges that are certainly there for us.
Rebecca, in 2019, the county's affordability housing strategy identified the need for 900 affordable housing units by 2029. That's less than 5 years away. You have already created 173 units, and there are 78 more units in the proposal stage. I don't mean to be a Debbie Downer, but that seems like a big gap. What are the missing pieces that you need to find to get to your goal?
I think I'm going to take the opposite approach, that I think I'm really encouraged that we're at about a third of it. The 900 new units is an aspirational target. It is what we need to knock our wait list down by 50%. And I will say, I'll be the first to say, we do need more than 900 now that, 2019 was pre-COVID, pre-interest rate hikes, pre-escalation. Projects across the board, across the province are, getting closer to being left on the shelf because of those challenges to make projects viable. The construction cost escalation is growing year over year. Our interest rates to borrow, when we set out for Elkin Park, I mean, the interest rates were, don't quote me, I could go find it in a report for you, were about 1%. That's not where we are now. And that impacts what and how and where we can build. Northumberland County hasn't had to put projects on shelf yet, but we are aware of other areas that are. And so we really need to navigate that funding that is needed by all levels of government. I've talked before, Rob, about, the philosophy of a third, a third, a third, where each level of government, service manager, federal and provincial, are each providing a third of the funding for projects. We're not there yet. And not that we're not grateful and appreciate the support we've had to date. You know, we have farther to go. I think, you know, the federal government has seen some of those things with the National Housing Strategy and some of those conversations. And I think the other thing is that we also recognized in those 900 units that we didn't anticipate the private sector playing a larger role. But again, they have been hit as equally hard as we have with those, with the escalation, with the interest rate. And so I think we're doing what we can. Our heads are down. We're working diligently, and we'll keep working towards those goals. So, in terms of what's missing, it's really all of those things. And we're in a different world and in a different environment now than we were in 2019. And it's harder to build. It was hard enough in 2019, and it's harder to build now with those costs.
Being with you, Rebecca, I recently interviewed Dan Borowick, the Director of Strategic Initiatives, about workforce housing. Are any of these units that you're proposing for this purpose?
So, I mean, the model that the Workforce Housing Development Corporation aren't being considered at this property. We are looking at future collaborations and how we can work together. One of the main differences being that workforce housing is an ownership model, whereas the NCHC focuses on rental. And when you mix ownership and rental, to not bore your listeners with all the technicalities, we're talking things like condos and boards and voting rights. And so it becomes very challenging to mix those two pieces together. But what I will say is that the households that the NCHC supports today and will support in the future are folks who are working, who need that support, who can't maybe afford to get into the ownership market, or maybe don't want to be in the ownership market, who are, you know, doing critical jobs in our community, who are taking care of our children as early childhood educators and daycare staff, who are looking after our parents and our grandparents in, you know, in long-term care, be they PSWs, you know, all sorts of folks who are unable to enter into that market affordable, that market right affordability, are folks that the NCHC supports. So philosophically, we are supporting folks who are in the workforce. We support them every day. They live, they are our tenants. They're part of our community. In addition to folks who are seniors and maybe out of the workforce and all of those kinds of things. But the model of the Workforce Development Corporation, we haven't considered it for this site. It's just too small to be able to fit multiple of those priorities into one site.
Neil, this goes before the committee, and if it's approved, then it goes off to County Council for final approval. If that is successful, when will shovels go into the ground? What's your timeline?
It'd be nice to have shovels in the ground in the latter half of next year. You know, assuming we get the approvals we need from committee and from council, then I'll meet internally with our partners here with our major capital projects team, and we'll start looking at what are those initial stages that we need to do in terms of what are the consultants and what is the construction methodology that we'll be implementing here, getting that work done, meeting with the architects and the design work, so that hopefully we can have that lined up, get a cost estimate, and maybe have a shovel on the ground in, you know, 12 to 18 months.
Rebecca, if listeners have questions or wish to comment on this project, how can they do this?
So they can comment on a few different ways. They can go on our website. Very shortly, we will have a page dedicated to 123 King Street. They can call our office and ask to speak with Neil, ask to speak with myself. You know, we can be reached by in that way as well. There's also on our website, there's just a general ask a question, and our communication staff ensure that those questions get to the appropriate department, and we will respond and follow up to those questions as well. So there's lots of ways that people can engage and connect. But those would be the ways that I would suggest at the forefront.
Rebecca Carmen, Neil Ellis, thank you so much for talking to me today.
Thanks, Rob.
Thank you.
That was Rebecca Carmen, Director of Housing and Homeless for Northumberland County, and Neil Ellis, Housing Services Manager. I want to thank my guests this week for talking to me, and I want to thank all the listeners for tuning in today. Please join me again next week when we will talk to the people on the front lines and those behind the scenes who make a difference in your life and Northumberland County. So please tune in. If you would like to listen or share this or any podcast, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. There you will find past podcasts, news, and other information about life and politics in Northumberland County. Or you can go to the radio station's website at northumberland897.ca. I'm Robert Washburn. Thanks for taking time out of your day to listen in, and I hope over the week you will continue to consider this. Thank you for listening to this podcast from Consider This. If you have any comments or would like to suggest a story, please contact me at considerthisnorthumberland@gmail.com, or you can message me on Facebook at Consider This. If you enjoyed this podcast or are looking for more news and information about Northumberland County, please check out my website at consider-this.ca. That's consider-this.ca. And don't forget to share. And again, thank you for listening and stay tuned for more from Consider This.